I'm pleased and honored today to have as our guest Michael Conley. And we'll be discussing The Closers, published by Little Brown. It will be released on May 16th, 2005. And first of all, Michael, thank you very much for appearing on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Michael, I remember very well in early 1992, I was in New York City and I walked up the spiral staircase of the Mysterious Bookshop and Otto Penzler handed me a book, The Black Echo. And it was had a little blue band around it, which signified that it was a first edition. And Otto handed this to me and he said, "You have to read Michael Conley." And that was the start of my knowledge of your work. And I think that if we look at crime fiction today, the series that you're writing involving Harry Bosch is turning into one of the most influential, I think, in the history of crime fiction. And if you would, go back a bit to 92 when you published The Black Echo, and when you started writing the character of Harry Bosch, could you ever imagine that he would still be around in the series? And how hard was it as the series started to grow to stay true to the character of Harry Bosch as the character became more complex?
Well, probably before I answer that, I should just ask, do you still have the blue band? Because those things are pretty valuable.
Yes, I do.
And I can still remember being somewhat, it was my ego, I guess, damaged, but I was insulted by the blue band because it was a cross promotion with another book my publisher was putting out, and if you bought both books and sent in the blue band, you got like a discount or a refund or a rebate or something like that. But the blue band went across my name, so I remember stripping off dozens of those blue bands as I would proudly send the book to a family member or a friend, and I just threw them all out. Now I wish I had sent them with the blue band, because that seems to be in the collecting market something that pushes the book up a few notches. But anyway, to your question, no, there's no way you can ever know what's going to happen. And you just got to, no matter where you are, unpublished, 5 books down the line, 10 books down the line, I really believe you just got to keep your head down and write the best story you can write, and you can not hold anything back. I think I went into Harry Bosch, you know, hopeful that, you know, maybe someone would publish this, not thinking like this will be the start of the series. I didn't hold anything back for future books in the series or anything like that. I just put everything I could into that book, kept my head down, didn't study the publishing industry, didn't know any agents or anything like that. I had the book finished before I ever even tried to look into that world. And then I got lucky. I got lucky repeatedly, actually. Like any unpublished writer, you know, it's like, as I've often said, you're like in a dark room with a flashlight with the battery dying. You don't really know anything about the publishing world. It's kind of like this abstract world where, you know, how does it work? How do I get in? And, you know, I went to the bookstore and bought a bunch of books on the market, the publishing market, and how to get published, so on and so forth. And like everybody else, I sent out lots of letters to agents, hoping that somebody would be interested in my story and interested in me. And I on this list, I kind of graded them according to who would be my first choice. And although he wasn't the first one to respond to me, I eventually ended up with my first choice. That was one of the lucky things, because he called on one day, someone called 2 days later, and you know, I could have gone with that other person. So I look back and think, man, I'm glad, you know, it's serendipity in a way. I'm just glad that things turned out the way it was, because the agent I got immediately had a long view of me, of my talent, of this character that was in the first book named Harry Bosch. And that kind of set the stage that he wasn't interested in, you know, kind of being in and out, getting a deal and getting out. He was looking for a deal with that book where I could be joined with an editor and I could have possibly a long-term relationship. And it's very fortuitous because that's pretty much what happened. There was a little blip in the beginning. The editor that he hooked me up with edited my book and then quit before it even was published, but a new, young, up-and-coming editor was immediately assigned to me, and he kind of shepherded me into the market, and I've had that editor for 15 books now. So I've had, from the beginning, found me through no real effort of my own, just through serendipity, basically, who have had a long-term view of my career. And I know a lot about the business now, much more than when I was in that dark room with a dying flashlight. And I know how lucky that was, because not many writers get that. So that's what the beginning, the answer to your first question. The part about sustaining Harry Bosch, if I got your question right, remains or is the most difficult thing I do. And I'm not saying it's very difficult. I'm just saying, all things considered, the dilemma of how do you keep a character alive in terms of the reader's mind and imagination, in terms of it evolving, not on the page, not in plot, how to keep them alive, but how do you keep from book to book to book people interested in this character? And the, you know, part and parcel of that is how do you keep your own interest? Writing, there's many similarities between writing and reading, but there's also some differences, and the biggest difference is time. To read a Harry Bosch book, it takes whatever, 2, 3, 4 a week, three, you know, a few days, whatever it takes to read it, it's fine. But to write a Harry Bosch book, I have to spend a year with that character. I have to spend a long time. I have to be able to be plugged in and invigorated and able to carry that weight or carry that water through the year. And that's where the dilemma is. How do I keep plugged in? And there's no clear-cut answer. I've tried different things. You know, the main or the bottom line answer is the only constant in a series should be change. The character's got to change. You got to evolve. You know, I know there's series out there where the character never ages. You never know what day it is. I mean, what time of year or whatever, so that the characters can live forever. I chose the opposite tack. I gave Harry a specific birth date. The stories, when they're published, they are taking place in the time of that publication period, and so Harry's evolving. He's set against the backdrop of a city that is evolving, and I found that was one way to keep him interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
To make him very contemporary, use the things, earthquakes, riots, whatever is happening in Los Angeles, and build them into the story. And, you know, and then there's been other changes, other things I've done. I've taken years off from writing about them. When I write a book that's called a standalone, like The Poet or Bloodwork, the real reason for that is for Harry Bosch. I've sensed instinctively that it's time to take a year off from him and recharge my battery. So everything I do, all the moves I make are really about Harry Bosch and how to keep him going.
Okay, you know, Michael, I think a very good point there when you talk about Los Angeles, and as any good mystery series, the city in which it takes place is critical. And I think that if you look at California has been the site of several great classic mystery series, starting with, not necessarily starting with, but Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett being the obvious examples. But I think that Harry Bosch and what you do, it combines kind of the craft that Raymond Chandler had with the lyricism of Ross McDonald, which is an author that I don't think gets as much publicity as he deserves, with his importance in the mystery novel, because Ross McDonald took the crime novel and really advanced it forward with social concerns and writing about what was happening in Santa Barbara and the environment. And I see Harry Bosch doing the same thing with Los Angeles.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone learns from the people before them. And probably the three greatest influences on me as a writer, Raymond Chandler, Ross McDonald, and Joseph Wambaugh. And what I tried to do in my books, you know, from day one, was combine them all. I remember specifically thinking, and this sounds weird, but what if Joseph Wambaugh and Raymond Chandler had gotten together and produced a son, if you will? I wanted that to be Harry Bosch. I wanted him to have the attributes of the cop characters you read in Wambaugh and of the kind of loner archetype that I think Chandler established the best. And then you add in Ross McDonald and his social mirror that he held up in his book. You know, I write mystery novels, so, you know, first and foremost, I wanted stories with intrigue and entertainment. But really enough to suffice or to fulfill my artistic ambitions. I want to add another dimension. I want to say something about the society that this detective moves through. It might be a small corner of the world, Los Angeles, but if you can kind of do that, if you can make that kind of an everyman story, how this guy looks at the world in Los Angeles, how he survives, how he gets by, there's almost an empathic connection that will take you around the world. People don't even have to have been in Los Angeles to understand this character. And that gets into the whole mystery of writing. It's hard for me to even put into words other than that. It's one of these things, you know it when you see it, you know it when you read it, you know it when you write it, and you can kind of feel that you're on the same path. But I'm definitely, the descendant of those masters, and I agree with you. Raymond Chandler is, well known. Ross McDonald is not as well known, and I think he took it a step further from Chandler, and, I'm just endeavoring to be one of the people who carry it forward from there.
Well, I think it's safe to say you're doing that. Michael, one of the things that I think has made Harry Bosch, one of the things that's had a tremendous impact on him occurred in Lost Light, and that was when Harry Bosch discovered that he was a father. And it seems that becoming a father completely turned Harry Bosch's world around, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the, I think there's 11 Harry Bosch books, or were, with the one that comes out in May. There's,
yes.
And that's got to be one of the most important moments of the whole series for a number of reasons. If I can digress and talk here for a while.
Yeah.
There's a reason from behind the story, or from the writer's standpoint, that when I started writing about Harry Bosch, I, as I said before, I'd set my head down, had no idea whether it would be published, hoped it would, obviously. But I also was staring at the prospect of spending, 2 years or 3 years. I ended up spending like 2.5. But at the beginning, when you have the blank page or the blank computer, you have no idea what's going to happen. And so what I came to a conclusion of, well, maybe nothing will happen of this, but I want it to be a good experience. I want it an enjoyable experience, that if I'm going to go up into my room, at the time it was actually writing in a walk-in closet, if I was going to go in there 4 nights a week and all day on one weekend day, I want it to be worth my time, even if it never got published. And one of the conclusions I came to, or ideas, was that write about someone who's completely different from me, who has nothing in common with me, and so that I have to think about this character and what would he do in this situation and that situation. And I thought that would make an interesting experience, a fulfilling experience. So that's how I started off on the road with Harry Bosch. And as I've already said, I got lucky, and there's a call for another story and then another story. And so now I'm several Harry Bosch stories down the line, and it becomes too difficult to keep that distance of writing about someone repeatedly who is completely different from me. So over the course of the novels, more of me gets into Harry Bosch, and maybe some of him gets into me, but he's starting to share attributes and viewpoints that I have. And during this period, I became a father, and that turned my life upside down, and it changed my life, and it made it better, and it made it different in many ways. And so I just thought, going back to that dilemma of how do I keep this guy evolving, how do I keep him alive in my imagination and the reader's imagination, I decided to make him a father. And I kind of jump-started it, and it was a surprise moment that he finds out he's the father of a five-year-old daughter, who at that time I had a five-year-old daughter. And so I build in this thing where I can just walk down the hall to research fires of our failed bureaucracy, going all the way back to orphanages, the military service, and now the bureaucracy of the police department. And he's come through that with this idea that he is a man on a mission, and that he has a talent or a craft or a specialness about him, that he's on this planet for one reason, and that's to right the ultimate wrong, to find the people who kill other people. And to do that right, he has purposely and subconsciously built himself to be bulletproof so that he cannot be gotten to, that he is not vulnerable. And all in the course of the 5 pages of that last chapter of Lost Light, all that went away because he can now that he has a child, he knows he can be gotten to. He's vulnerable, and he has to watch out for someone else who unfortunately is not even living with him, that is far away most of the time, which increases the fear and vulnerability that he feels. And so yeah, it was a huge sea change in the series. It colors everything that happens afterwards and will happen afterwards. And yeah, I think it's made it more interesting. That's the bottom line. I think it gave the series, it gave Harry Bosch, the character of Harry Bosch, a new life.
Yes, I agree, Michael. It was a stunning moment. And one of the things I like that you do is Terry McCaleb is another character who's appeared in a couple of your novels. And there's In a Darkness More Than Night, I remember when I read the line, I was just struck by it. When Bosch asked McCaleb McCaleb talks about his daughter Cielo Azul, and he said, "What's it like being a father?" And I'm paraphrasing here, but I said, McCaleb said something like, "It's like having a gun to your head."
Yeah.
And when I read that, I said, "What does he mean?" And we're starting to understand what that means to Harry Bosch, I think, as the series unfolds. And that's part of, I think, the brilliance of introducing that when you did, is it really does add a different character to Harry Bosch that wasn't there prior to this happening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the regular parents, myself included, would never come up with the idea of like having a gun to your head. But I think McCaleb is somewhat of the same mold of Harry, probably a little bit. He was probably a little better adjusted, but that was the line that he could only say to someone else who is in the light, who knows the mission, and so that's where that came from.
Okay. Mike, let's talk a minute about The Closers now, which is the, as you mentioned, it's the 11th in the Harry Bosch series, your 15th novel overall. And The Closers, you put back into the first person again. If you would, explain to us, if you would, why you went back to the first person with The Closers.
You know, I went back to the third. I was in the first person for the last two books. Well, I'm back up, I guess, to City of Bones, which, that would be the eighth Harry Bosch book. And the end of City of Bones, and I hope we put a disclosure on this tape because we're talking about the endings of so many books here. But Harry grows frustrated for a number of reasons and quits the police department. And so then I wrote Lost Light, which is mentioned, and then The Narrows, which has Harry Bosch in it. And in those books, he's operating as on a private ticket. He's a private eye. And when I wrote those books, especially Lost Light, the first one of those two, I realized I was really treading into the world of the masters and the people who really influenced me, and as we've mentioned, Ross McDonald and Raymond Chandler. And I just thought I should, if I was going to write the Private Eye novel, it's taken me 12 or 13 books to get to a Private Eye novel, that I should write it in the same style. And so I switched Harry into first person, and those two books he's in first person. And you know, I found that to be the big challenge of those books, actually, because I was so set in my ways and writing him in third person. And when you're in third person, you can hold some things back. And I think one of the reasons that people liked the Bosch books were they weren't always sure what he was up to. And in first person, you can't really, you got to tell the reader what you're up to, or else you're kind of cheating them. And so I missed that dimension. And so then, in The Closers, Harry takes advantage of a program they have in LAPD, which they within 3 years. And some things happened to Harry in the course of Lost Light and the Narrows, which make him think that he made a mistake at the end of that case in the book City of Bones, and that he should come back into the fold. And so he does. So in the closers, it starts with Harry first day reporting back to duty. And since he went back into the police department, I went back into the mold I had used in the previous stories where he was a police detective, and that was third person.
Yeah, and when Harry goes back this time, Michael, he's in the he's assigned to the Open Unsolved Department, and Captain Norman says to him, there's new hope for the dead. Harry Bosch is on the case again. And one of the things I love about your books is if you're a mystery aficionado, that's a nice tip of the hat to Charles Williford, and who was a great crime writer in his own right. And then you tell us that you give us some information about how many open cases there are in Los Angeles and how the advances in DNA and fingerprint technology have left so many of the open unsolved cases out there. And I'm sure that this has a basis in fact, and it really is very intriguing when you look at the numbers involved.
Yeah, well, the LA is a huge place, and it's a shame, and it's horrible, and it's sad, but there's huge, huge numbers of unsolved murders, rapes, any kind of crime. And so when I was researching this book, I was lucky in that members of the LAPD's cold case squad took me under their wing. I was able to observe them and hang out with them, and it's really, it's like their blood is in the blood of this book. And so, yeah, I build it on a foundation of fact. All those statistics revealed in the opening pages of the closers are actual, the actual statistics, and it's pretty daunting when you consider there's thousands of unsolved homicides that could potentially be solved by just running fingerprints through a computer or running a DNA analysis. It's still, the burden of bureaucracy is still very heavy on the police department and on this squad in particular. And that was kind of the stuff I wanted to get into. I also wanted to get into the idea of using investigating an old unsolved case to show evolution of time, to show the ripple effects of crime through time, through family, through community, neighborhood, or whatever. And it just kind of seemed like the perfect venue for doing that. It's just really been interesting that, I've already mentioned this, the luck or the being in the right place at the right time. I mean, my entree into this world simply came from a detective I've known for a while who was assigned elsewhere, and he got assigned to this unit. And by virtue of that, he kind of brought me into it, and I've met, you know, a whole new group of very dedicated detectives who are going through the old file. So it's been pretty amazing, and I feel, I talked about how at the end of Lost Light, I thought the series was recharged when Harry finds out he has a kid. Well, I think as I was researching the closers and spending time with these detectives and taking some of their anecdotal stories and giving them to Harry Bosch, I was recharged myself with the series, and I think it's given this book, The Closers, gives it new life again.
Yes, I really enjoyed the book. I think it's fantastic. And Michael, when you talk about detectives helping you out, how has that changed over the years with the success of the series? You were a reporter in Los Angeles at the start of your career, and I'm sure you had a lot of interaction with detectives at that point in time. And now with the Harry Bosch series, you've achieved great acclaim. And are detectives that you work with, are they a lot of people that you've known for a long time and they've kind of been along for the ride with you, or do you have new fans and new detectives that you work with as your stories unfold?
Kind of evolved. I would say, well, first of all, going back to when I was a newspaper reporter, I knew lots of detectives, and things I observed and stories I heard became in part, the basis of Harry Bosch. I also took literary and movie influences at arm. They held me at arm's length. And my first three books I wrote while I was a reporter. So it was only after I quit being a reporter that I started getting better access. And over the years, the access has come from different detectives who have, didn't know me as a reporter but discovered me as a writer. Now, I got to say, I think a small percentage of police detectives read crime novels because it's what they do every day. So why go home and relax by reading the same thing? And most of the time, the writers either get it wrong unknowingly or intentionally, put things in that are not correct procedure and so forth for the sake of keeping a story moving for momentum and reasons like that. But so I don't think there's a big contingent of police detectives out there reading these books, but there are a few, and they, through the wonder of the internet and websites and so forth, I've been contacted by them who, and oftentimes they'll say in a polite way, this thing you did here is not really the way it would have been done. This is how we would have done it. And if you ever need any future help, feel free to email me. That's how a relationship will start, and I usually take them up on that. I thank them for telling me, setting me straight. And I come back to them when I want something else. So most of my relationships now with the detectives that I really count on for helping me are people I didn't know when I was a reporter.
Okay. Now, in the closers, Michael, if you would, the part of the plot, this principal part of the plot involves Muriel Valorin and Robert Valorin and their daughter. And it really, I think, is a fascinating look at what happens when parents go through a tragedy like that, and it reverberates through their lives. And it also has some elements of prejudice and racism and what are the classic components, I think, of a Harry Bosch novel. And how did the characters, the Valorins, come about in your mind, Michael?
Well, I would say this book is heavily influenced by Mystic River by Dennis Lehane, which was, it's classified as a crime novel, but it's really a social novel. It really kind of shows the disintegration of a community of family because of a crime in a shorter period than in The Closers. But I'm really amazed and inspired by what Dennis Lehane did in that book. I just thought it was a real masterwork. And so I consciously said I want to write a story, tell a story that would delve into this as well, the ripple effect of crime over time and how a murder is just pebble dropped into the lake and the ripples go out and they can knock down families and destroy families and change communities and so forth. I think it's kind of a fascinating thing, and it's something, that it harkens also back to Ross McDonald and books like The Underground Man. The idea of the past coming out of the ground, grab you around the ankle and pull you back, that is very strong theme that I've been drawn to as a reader and as a writer. So this is just another take on it. And I was a newspaper reporter in Los Angeles at the time of this murder set in 1988. And that was shortly after I came to Los Angeles. I came to L.A. in 1987 as a newspaper reporter. And there was a sense at that time that we were kind of like a thin ice, that the city was just barely being held together. And, of course, a couple years later, there were riots and so forth. So there was a sense that I, as a newcomer to the city, I felt the social fabric was really being strained. And I just wanted to write about that time if I could. And so the story obviously takes place in 2005, but they're looking into a murder that happened in 1988. And so a lot of the investigation goes into what society was like back then.
Okay.
I just keep on talking about the stuff because...
No, please do.
That's the story, but, that's... Again, I keep repeating myself, is that when I started a Harry Bosch book, I know I got to climb up a mountain again. I got to carry two buckets of water up the mountain. And so I want to make sure I have a good story, and I want to make sure I have something that's going to keep me focused and plugged in and not needing an alarm clock to get up in the morning to write. And so when you come up with an idea like that, it just really pulls at you. It really intrigues you. And so in a way, the plot of the book is a trick of the writer to keep him involved and going.
Mm-hmm. Mike, you mentioned earlier, I think you used the word wait, and it seems when I read the Harry Bosch novels, it seems that Bosch does carry a weight, and it's palpable. And some crime writers, they kind of name whatever the flaw that the protagonist has. But it seems to me you've been kind of careful with Harry Bosch that he doesn't have like one particular flaw, if you will, that is more visible than others. In different books, he seems to be struggling with different issues. And I think that kind of keeps it fresh for me as a reader that he did veer into alcoholism or drug addiction or gambling or something like that. He kind of keeps his fingers in some different things, but he doesn't seem to get obsessed about any one thing in particular.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're looking for connections to reader. I think the whole thing about reading is, and, you know, the mystery that I keep saying I can't put my finger on, is that building this strike zone, this empathic strike zone between your character and your reader. And, you know, I think, you know, Harry is not like most of us. He has his life is a kind of a lonely pursuit, yet I think a noble pursuit. But I think if he veered into some of these ills, if you want to call them that, it would be cutting off a good part of the audience from not understanding that. So even though I say he's like this lonely pursuit, I still think he has, or I try to build within him a lot of everyman type qualities that people can connect to. A lot of it is his viewpoint of the world. I mean, I think that's where he connects to readers is his hopefulness that is tainted by disappointment. And, you know, he has the first city, but, you know, if you've ever been to Los Angeles, there's nobody who doesn't have that hopefulness that is met with disappointment. And, you know, that's where I think he connects. So it's never really been an attraction to me to put him into some of these things that you're talking about, like drug addiction or alcoholism and so forth. That can also become, if you're building your character for the long run, and when I started out, as I said, I had my head down, I had no idea and no plans, but I'm well past that now. I now know that as long as I keep writing Harry Bosch, there'll probably be someone who'll want to publish them and someone who'll want to read them. So I now have a longer view, and I think if you have someone drop into that kind of situation, it can be very repetitive through a series, and it can almost become a one-note character handle, and that's why I don't want to have that.
Yeah, and that's when I think one of the geniuses, Michael, of your novels, of the Harry Bosch novels, well, all of your novels, but my wife just read The Closers, and I asked her, I said, did you feel that when you read The Closers that you should have read the 10 novels that preceded it? And she said no. She said it was a very satisfying experience for me to read The Closers as the first book. And that takes a real talent, because those of us that have read all of them know a lot more about Harry Bosch, but The Closers is a novel that someone can pick up and read, and they don't have to have read The Black Echo. They don't have to know that he was in Vietnam. And that I think is a real what sets your series apart, maybe from others, where you come. Sometimes you read it and you say, "There's some things going on here that I don't understand."
Yeah, I mean, I think you really have to look at each book from the standpoint of me, the writer, of being a self-contained story, and you can take characters and take resonances from the other books as needed into it, but I don't want anyone to feel like they have to have read anything beforehand coming out. You know, I wouldn't ever tell someone, go back and read the stuff beforehand, go back to the Black Echo, you know, go back to my first effort as a writer. But I think I've evolved and grown better. And so I would never, I would say, read my best work.
Yeah.
That's what I've got out right now. And so that goes into the idea of just making this self-contained because, you know, I don't want people to have to go back or feel they have to go back.
Sure. I think that A Darkness More Than Night, if my wife were to ask me what to read next, I think A Darkness More Than Night, as a reader, I found out a lot about Harry Bosch in that particular novel, about Hieronymus Bosch, the painter, and some of the things that motivates Harry Bosch. And when I read A Darkness More Than Night, that was a very satisfying book for me because I really came away from that book feeling like I knew a lot more about Harry Bosch than I did when I started it.
Yeah, I think there's been two books. Again, there's a, as I said before, I write mystery fiction, so there's a real need for entertainment and intrigue and all the thing, all the commercial aspects of the genre. And so, you know, I build them into the books. It's one reason why I like the genre. So, and I don't think it's a compromise of artistry. It's part and parcel of the genre, and that's fine. But every now and then, it just kind of comes organically, I guess, or instinctively, I steer into a book that would be character-driven first and plot-driven second. And the two that come to mind are The Last Coyote, which was the fourth book, and A Darkness More Than Night, which you mentioned, which is my tenth book, and also, I think, the eighth or something. Of the Bosch series, hard to keep track of all these. But those are the two books, you know, that are probably closest to me, that I like the best, simply because they're more of an exploration of Harry Bosch internally than his outward exploration of a crime. And what I liked a lot about The Darkness More Than Night was it was another angle, it provided me another angle in Harry Bosch. The Bosch books up to that point, were third person, but you saw the story, you were delivered to the story through Harry Bosch. You saw the world through his eyes. And in A Darkness More Than Night, there's a kind of a split, a narrative where sometimes you're with Harry Bosch and sometimes you're seeing the world through Terry McKayla's eyes, and part of that world is Harry Bosch, and it's another character, Terry McKayla's viewpoint on Harry Bosch. And that made the writing period of that book really probably one of the funnest books I ever wrote, or one of the most fulfilling writing periods I ever had, because it was this character I'd lived with for 10 years or so, long time, and it was it kind of freed me up to have another look at him from a different viewpoint. So that was one reason why that book is one of the ones I liked the best.
Great. Our guest today is Michael Connelly. We've been discussing Mr. Connelly's body of work. In particular, we've been talking about The Closers, which is being published by Little Brown on May 16th of 2005. And Michael, first of all, thank you very much for the generous time that you've given us today. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, sure. Glad to be here.
Michael, when I was talking to Otto Penzler about your work at one point in time, he told me that your novels sell fabulously well in Europe and around the world. And when you travel to other parts of the world and talk to Harry Bosch fans, is there any difference between the fans that live around the world, or do they tend to be similar to the fans that you have here in the United States?
I think there's a little bit of difference. I mean, the whole international situation or scene with me is amazingly gratifying and amazingly confusing. And I think, you know, to some degree I'm benefiting from writing about a city that has international interest and intrigue. And Los Angeles is exported in movies and TV shows around the world. And so the fact that I'm writing about a detective who kind of peels back the media image and tells the reader what Los Angeles is really like, what's happening on the underside of Los Angeles, I think puts me a league ahead of a writer who would be writing about Chicago or Miami or any other place. I think that gave me a step up as far as publishers in other countries taking a look. And then when they took a look, they liked this character and they decided to go to bat with him in these other countries. And so I've had good fortune in being with publishers who wanted to take a shot. I mean, that's mostly what it's about. If you write a good story, that's not enough, especially when it comes to the international market. You got to somehow get it out there. And I've been able to surround myself with the agents and people who have taken the shot at getting it out there, and the readers have responded. And I think, readers are looking for good characters, whether they're American or French or whatever. And I think I somehow stumbled into creating Harry Bosch in a way that appeals to people in Paris or Milan or Glasgow or Sydney. And these are all places I've gone and had wonderful reception to my work. But it is a mystery. It's a real mystery to me, like why somebody in Melbourne, Australia, would want to spend the time reading about this guy, Harry Bosch, and his quirky world of Los Angeles. But I just think people are looking for characters that they can relate to. Mm-hmm. They're looking for characters who, especially people who love mystery fiction, I think they're looking for characters that find themselves in extreme circumstances, and they want to see how those characters act in those circumstances, because I think that's what we're all wondering. How would we act in those situations? And maybe we want to take our cues from somebody from Harry Bosch, or we want to hope that we could step up like Harry Bosch. And I think that is the kind of relationship between character and reader that doesn't know any international bounds or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But another aspect of this, I think, is that there's not a lot of crime fiction outside of the UK, but in other cities, other countries like France and Italy and so forth, there's not a huge legion of writers of mystery fiction. And so I think these readers look a lot to the United States and the UK for who they're going to read. And I think it's also an aspect of these countries. Almost any place you go, through the world of books, I've been able to travel to many places. And the one thing I noticed is that people in other countries look out to the world for ideas, to learn things. And the United States is more internal. We look inward. Maybe it's because we're so big, maybe it's because we're so powerful. But that's a big difference I've noticed in people when I've traveled and people I've talked to, readers and so forth.
Thank you. Well, Michael, you mentioned the word serendipity, and it does seem like serendipity has followed you in your writing career, but I think it's also serendipity combined with an incredible talent and storytelling capabilities. And I, for all the listeners out there, I would like to personally thank you for sticking with Harry Bosch and continuing to write these fabulous, groundbreaking novels. And I don't think often enough we thank writers for continuing to put their head down and write the novels and the stories that we've come to enjoy so much. You've given me a tremendous amount of entertainment, and I've learned a lot from Harry Bosch. So I'd like to thank you for writing about Harry Bosch and continuing to write about Harry Bosch.
Thank you for such kind words and your interest in this. It's really my honor to be able to do this, to be able to tell stories and see them taken to heart around the world. I mean, no one needs to thank me. I mean, it's just a pretty wonderful opportunity and experience that I've had.
Great. Well, Michael, thank you again for your time. And listeners, this has been a treat for me. I'm sure it has been for you. And Michael, hopefully we'll catch up with you again down the road when the next novel that you write comes out.
Thank you. Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.